Welcome to today's SNEB webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Executive Director of SNEB and glad you're joining us for the presentation today. We're excited that we have two presenters from the National Salt and Sugar Reduction Initiative, which SNEB is a partner in that effort. So I hope you enjoy today's presentation. A little housekeeping to get us started. If you look in the GoToWebinar tool panel, you'll see the handout for today. So please download that as you follow along the presentation. We will take questions. So please type those in the question block so I can moderate the questions to our presenters. And then when I close the webinar today, there'll be a short survey. We appreciate your feedback on this session, as well as ideas for future sessions. And then watch for a follow-up email. I suspect maybe not until Monday of this week, with a link to the recording from today, as well as the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance. So our presenters today are Andrea Sharkey. Andrea is a project manager at the New York City Health Department. She coordinates the NSSRI initiative. And with her is Erin Dowling. Erin is an analyst with the New York City Health Department, where she manages nutrition data for this effort. So I will turn this over to our presenters.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. And good afternoon, everybody. We'd like to thank SNEB for giving us the opportunity to speak with you all today. Erin and I are both really happy to be here on behalf of the National Salt and Sugar Reduction Initiative, or the NSSRI for short, an initiative convened by the New York City Health Department. So some of you may be familiar with this effort or the effort that we started back in 2009, where we focused on sodium reduction, whereas this framework may be brand new to others. So we're delighted to be here to continue to talk about our work on sugar reduction and to tell you about the targets that we recently released. Okay, so this slide shows the three nutrition educator competencies that today's presentation will cover. All three fall within the food and nutrition policy and the agriculture productions and food systems categories. So we have 5.4, which is to describe the history and current roles of governmental and non-governmental organizations that develop and implement nutrition education programs and related health promotion or food security activities. We have 5.5, which is describe ways to collaborate with community members and other professionals to create communities and settings in which healthy food options are easy, affordable, and desired, and unhealthy foods are less prominent and less desired. And then finally, we have 6.4, which is to describe ways to collaborate with other stakeholders to promote policies supporting systems that produce healthy foods. So what's new? I will start with a high-level summary of what's new with the initiative, and then go into a little bit more detail about the sugar reduction targets later in the presentation. So last month, the National Salt and Sugar Reduction Initiative released voluntary sugar reduction targets, which represent a multi-year effort that included calling for and receiving two rounds of comments from the food and beverage industry. We released 15 categories of foods and beverages with voluntary targets to be met by 2023 and 2026. As the New York City Health Department, supporting health equity is something that we bring to all of our work here. And we know that many factors shape health outcomes, including a history of racist and discriminatory policies and practices that have resulted in high concentrations of poverty, inequitable distributions of resources, and disinvestment in things like transportation options, recreational space, and access to healthy foods. These factors all present challenges to consumers when trying to eat healthier. Ubiquitous marketing and hyperavailability of unhealthy food products can be found in communities across the U.S., making it challenging for individuals to make healthy choices. So in this context, one of the goals of this initiative is to work toward a healthier food supply that in turn increases consumer choice when it comes to packaged foods and beverages. Although the NSSRI is led by New York City, we represent a national partnership of over 100 organizations who have come together to make one joint ask of industry. And this is to have a clear, consistent ask and to acknowledge that the packaged food and beverage supply is distributed nationally. It's not just made and distributed for one particular city or state. So this slide shows the strength of the coalition. We have a partnership of over 100 city and state health authorities, health organizations, and associations from across the country. Each circle or star on this map represents a city in which we have one or more partners, and the stars are city or county or state health departments, and the circles are public health associations. So each star circle on this map, like I said, represents a city where we have one or more partner. And in cities like New York City, Chicago, and DC, for example, they're home to several partner organizations. As I mentioned, city, county, and state health departments, professional associations, and other national organizations that are working to promote public health. The full list of partners can all be found on our website. And as Rachel mentioned, we're so happy that SNEB is a part of our partnership. And if you are part of an organization that you think may be interested in joining the partnership, I'd encourage you to reach out. We're always happy to expand our reach. You know, the more partners we have, the stronger the initiative becomes. And it's also a really unique opportunity to be a learning collaborative where cities and states and organizations from across the country can share information and research and learn from one another. So a little bit of background about how we arrived here. The NSSRI originally started as the National Salt Reduction Initiative, or the NSRI for short. And at that point in time, we were focused only on sodium reduction. As I mentioned earlier, the initiative started in 2009, and it was modeled after an initiative that was started in the United Kingdom. The New York City Health Department launched the initiative and worked to convene the partnership that we talked about on the prior slide with the goal of asking industry to voluntarily commit to sodium reduction. Reducing sodium in packaged and restaurant food is a way to reduce sodium intake and ultimately reduce the risk of heart disease and stroke. We estimated that if we decreased sodium content in the food supply by 25%, that we could decrease sodium intake by about 20%. And then working with industry, we collaboratively set sodium reduction targets for packaged food categories and restaurant categories. We ended up with 28 companies committing to reduce sodium as part of the NSRI, and then we analyzed changes in the food supply over time. So looking at this graphic, which is from the most recent dietary guidelines, we can see the top sources of sodium in the diet. The bigger the circle, the more this food group contributes to sodium in the diet. And at the beginning of the NSRI, we similarly looked at top sources of sodium that were contributing to sodium intake. And the fact that sodium comes from so many sources suggests that there's a great opportunity for industry to make small changes across a variety of categories that could have a significant impact on the diet. Additionally, we designed the initiative to address packaged and restaurant foods because of where sodium in the diet comes from. So we know that about 70% of the sodium we consume is coming from packaged and restaurant foods. So the salt shaker isn't really the primary problem. The amount of salt added to products during manufacturing for things like flavor and preservation makes it really difficult for individuals to adequately reduce their salt intake on their own and to make healthier choices. So assessing progress was a key component of the NSRI, and we did this in a few ways. Primarily, we tracked sodium in the food supply by updating the packaged and restaurant food databases in both 2012, 2014, and again most recently in 2018. This allowed us to track the progress of the companies that committed to meet the targets, as well as looking at the food supply overall by individual category and including progress for companies that didn't publicly commit to the initiative. Committed companies also had the opportunity to submit product level data for committed categories at baseline 2012 and 2014 to track their progress. And this supplemental data was beneficial for smaller products that may not have been captured in our database. Since that target deadline, there have also been a few academic papers that were published. The paper that we cite and reference most often is called U.S. Food Industry Progress During the NSRI, and the objective was to assess the packaged food industry's products toward meeting the NSRI target. So using that packaged food database that we built, we assessed that nearly almost half of all food categories, so 26 out of the 61 categories for which we set targets, sodium density declined significantly. And overall, across all of the categories, sodium density declined by 6.8%. So what did we learn from the NSRI? Well, first we learned that this model works. The strength of the partnership was a really critical piece of demonstrating a shared interest across organizations nationally. We also saw that it produced results. As I mentioned, the sales-weighted mean sodium density among the categories for which we set targets came down by 6.8%. The second thing we learned is that engaging industry is critical. So 28 companies committed to meeting the targets, with many more engaging with us along the way and providing feedback on the categories and targets that we were working on. This is important as we recognize that industry is the food reformulation experts, and it's important for an initiative like this to happen at the table. And finally, we learned that local policy has the potential to influence federal action. So an initiative led and developed by a city government with a coalition from other organizations, many of which were local governments from across the country, was able to implement an innovative model for shifting our food supply. And the FDA has been receptive to this model as well. The companies that have been involved along the way are now the best positioned for any federal guidance. And we're keeping an eye on the federal government to determine what the next steps are going to be for sodium, as we know that the sodium consumption in the U.S. is still too high. But we're hopeful that the draft targets for sodium reduction that the FDA released in 2016 will soon be finalized, and we'll be able to continue to monitor progress over time in the food supply based on the database that we built. So as we all know, sodium is not the only issue in the food supply. And with the success of the NSRI and the interest in sodium by the FDA, we turned our attention to added sugar. So in thinking about the framework we developed and the partnership we built, we realized that we could use the same structure and a very similar process to expand our focus from sodium to include added sugars, which is becoming increasingly important to consumers. We know that consumers are paying more attention to sugar intake, and this will likely continue to be the case now that added sugars are broken out on the nutrition facts label. We're seeing recognition of the problem and interest from some key members of industry, and the NSSRI implements a framework that can accelerate this work and encourage the involvement of companies across the board, not just by a few key players. And so when we made this decision to look at added sugar, the NSRI became the NSSRI. Again, looking at this chart from the dietary guidelines, we can see that average intake of added sugars is 266 calories per day compared to the recommended limit of 200 calories per day for a 2000 calorie diet. We know that intake of added sugars is associated with negative health outcomes. Similar to sodium, sugar is ubiquitous in the food supply. So we know that 68% of packaged foods and beverages that are purchased in the U.S. contain some kind of caloric sweetener. This top source shows the sources of added sugar in the diet. We see a range of processed foods contributing to sugar here, such as beverages, snacks, and sweets. But then there are some other unexpected sources like salad dressing and barbecue sauce. And the NSSRI aims to target all of these types of foods, the ones that we know are very high in sugar and we should be limiting consumption, like candy and sugar, and those that may be more of a surprise, like sauces and condiments and yogurt. But looking at this chart, we really once again feel that this emphasizes the significant role that industry has in shaping diets. So this slide outlines the process we took to develop the sugar reduction targets. Similar to salt, our first step was to build a database to assess the food supply at baseline. We then drafted categories that contribute the most added sugar intake to the diet. And we created preliminary targets for each category and released them for industry feedback via a comment period. We updated our categories and targets in response to the first round of comments we received, and we released a revised set of targets for a second and final comment period. We then took that feedback and made final updates, and we released the final targets just about a month ago at the end of February. So we're in the process of spreading the word about these targets and encourage companies to work toward meeting these targets. And then we'll rebuild the initial database that we used to set the targets in 2023 and 2026 to assess any progress toward meeting those targets. And now I'm going to pass it off to Erin, who'll tell you a little bit more about the packaged food database and the targets in more detail.
Yeah, thank you, Andrea. So like Andrea said, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the targets and how exactly they work and a little bit more about how we built our packaged food database. So before we could go about establishing targets, we had to understand what the food supply looked like at a baseline. So we built our packaged food database. So in 2018, we merged Nielsen sales data from 2017 with nutrition data from Label Insight by the product CPC codes. So just a note here that at the time, added sugar was not yet present on nutrition labels. So we had to use total sugar as a proxy for added sugar. And for the majority of products we included in the initiative, total sugar does equal added sugar. The exception is for products with natural sugars like lactose. So we ended up creating a sugar allowance for dairy products in order to account for those naturally occurring sugars. So then for each packaged food category, we analyzed the top 80% of products by sales. And then we calculated a sales weighted mean and a range of sugar density for each category. So data were weighted by sales in order to reflect population intake, so that products with higher sales factored more heavily into a category's mean sugar density. So basically, the database allowed us to assess the mean and the distribution of sugar density by category, brand, and manufacturer, and this helped inform how we define the categories and then set targets. So this is an example of what we did for each category, and this chart the sugar densities along the x-axis, and the percent market share of each sugar density is on the y-axis. So we have a distribution of sugar density for the category, and you can see that the current sales weighted mean is where that gray line sits, at about 6 grams of sugar per 100 grams of food, so kind of right in the middle of the distribution. And then we can also see the range of products within this category. The products with the lowest sugar density fall between 1.1 and 2 grams, and the products with the highest sugar density fall between 11.1 and 12 grams. So here are all the categories that we wound up including in the initiative. We have 7 metacategories, and they include drinks, grain-based desserts and snack bars, refrigerated and frozen desserts, candies, breakfast cereals, condiments and toppings, and then yogurt. And then these metacategories are further divided into a total of 15 subcategories. And these categories, similar to the slide that Andrea showed before with the top sources of sugar, kind of match what we showed before and cover like the majority of added sugar in the diets of both children and adults. So about like 60% coverage for added sugars in the diet. So then the targets for the 15 food and beverage categories are based on sugar density, as I've mentioned, and that's defined as grams of sugar per 100 grams of food or 100 milliliters of liquid for our beverage categories. And then the targets are a reduction from the baseline in the sales-weighted mean sugar density. So the reason that we use sugar density as a metric is to target reformulation efforts. Using density means that a manufacturer can't just reduce package size in order to achieve the targets. And then the purpose of using a sales-weighted mean target is to reduce sugar density of the products in the category overall. So the first thing we did was calculate the baseline sales-weighted mean sugar density and then set targets based on a percentage reduction from that baseline. So then for most categories, the sales-weighted mean are set at a 10% reduction for 2023 and a 20% reduction for 2026. And then the targets are higher for sugary drinks. And so for that category, the 2026 targets are set at a 40% reduction. So this slide illustrates how the sales weighted mean target works. And this is using the same sample data that we looked at a few slides earlier. Again, in this chart, the sugar density is along the x-axis and the percent market share is along the y-axis. So you would read, the way you would read this is that about 20% of products in this category have a sugar density between 4.1 and 5 grams of sugar. So that's the tallest blue bar, just kind of left of center. The current sales weighted mean is where that gray line sits, again, at about 6 grams of sugar per 100 grams of food. And then the 2026 target is set to a reduction of 20%, and it's marked by that red line. So if industry responds by meeting the target for their products, it will shift the overall distribution to the left, as illustrated by that animation, and that would decrease sugar density across the whole category. And as a result, the sales weighted mean for the category would also shift to the left. So this is, again, a very similar view to what we just looked at before with sample data, but this chart uses real data from one of our categories. And we're once again looking at the distribution of sugar density. So the baseline sales weighted mean for this category is 27.1 grams, and that's marked by the gray line. The 2023 target, which is a 10% reduction, is 24.4 grams, and that's marked by the red dotted line. And then the 2026 target, which is a 20% reduction, is 21.7 grams, and that's represented by the solid red line. And we can also see that the products with the lowest density in this category fall within 0 to 2 grams, and then the highest fall within 44 to 46 gram. And again, the goal here is to shift the distribution overall to the left. So this doesn't mean that every product needs to fall below the sales weighted mean. Some can still be above, some can be below, but we're looking to shift the mean of the category to the left. So within this model, there are multiple ways that a company could go about meeting the target in a particular category. They could reformulate to lower the sugar in some of their existing products. They could remove some of the more sugar-dense products from the market. They could also introduce new lower sugar products, or they could use marketing and not really reformulate at all, and instead shift their portfolio of sales using marketing strategies to promote some of their already existing lower sugar products. And as you can see, this provides companies with flexibility, which is why we landed on the sales weighted mean as a central part of this framework. So just a note on reformulation around low and no calorie sweeteners. When we drafted the targets, it was with the expectations that companies would meet the proposed targets without increasing saturated fat, calories, sodium, or refined carbohydrates as part of reformulation to reduce sugar. So we advise companies to consider existing and new scientific research and regulations to determine the appropriate use of low and no calorie sweeteners. However, we do recommend avoiding the use of these ingredients in products that are marketed to or commonly consumed by children. So companies have the option to publicly commit to meeting the targets for 2023 and or 2026. And based on our past experience with the sodium reduction targets, we know that the targets could be used internally by industry even without public commitments. We feel that having these targets publicly available could be useful for our broader public health community, so academic institutions, government agencies, and advocacy organizations could use them as benchmarks as well. So yeah, I want to just thank you so much again for letting us share our work with you. We're happy to answer any questions you might have, either now as part of the Q&A, or please feel free to reach out to us at the sugar email, the New York City Department of Health. And please feel free to check out our website, which has some more information about the specific targets for each of the categories.
Excellent. Thank you. I do have some questions. Let me get those pulled up. So I have a question. Where can we find the list of companies that have publicly committed to the guidelines?
Andrea, for some reason, I'm not hearing you.
Oh, I was on mute. sorry, I will repeat the answer to that question. So I was saying that we, at this point, we are still circulating the sugar reduction targets, answering company questions, and trying to solicit commitments. So we don't have any companies that are committed to the sugar reduction targets at this point in time. If you go onto our website, you can see the list of industry companies that committed to the sodium reduction targets rather during the first phase of that initiative. And like Erin had mentioned, we still think it's really valuable, even if companies are not able to commit publicly to this initiative, that these targets are out in the world. We hope that companies will be able to use them as internal benchmarks.
Okay, so for added sugar, did you take into account the new DGA guidelines for added sugar and that is significantly higher than what the American Heart Association is recommending?
So, we didn't set these targets based on a particular recommendation for added sugar consumption. What instead we did was look at what added sugar consumption looks like and realize that it's far higher than both the DGA guidelines and AHA's recommendations, and then thought about how we set targets to bring that down. So we, yeah, we, I mean, we reference both the DGA, we reference the DGA in our work very frequently, and we know that that AHA has even a lower percent recommendation, but I would say these targets are not so much working to get folks all the way down to that recommended level, but it's just about making incremental changes in the food supply so that consumers are have a healthier selection to choose from when they're before products even reach the supermarket shelf.
And does your analysis also look at whether sodium or fat density changes to ensure that manufacturers aren't offsetting reductions with sugars, with increases in sodium or fat to maintain taste?
Yeah, so that is definitely something that we've considered. And we did do an analysis to that end for the sodium targets. And we found that companies didn't really increase calories or fat in order to reduce sodium in products that were reformulated. And we plan to do a similar analysis when it's time to evaluate in 2023 and 2026. So, yeah, definitely something that we are considering and want to make sure that we're not, reducing sugar at the cost of making products unhealthy in other ways.
So I have someone with a comment. I hear that sugar substitutes are being discouraged for children, so that sugar-free sodas, for example, would not be okay. Do you have any comment on that, question?
So the way the initiative is structured, any product that is included in the database has to have some added sugar. So, like a diet soda, for example, would not be in the database because it has only low or no calorie artificial sweeteners. you know, we are deferring to industry to think about different strategies that they can use to reduce the sugar in their products. And we recognize that what's becoming increasingly popular is this like hybrid, some artificial sweeteners, some real sugars. And we realize that that may be a possibility. And so our plan will be to be able to monitor that in the food supply over time. Based on the way our database is structured, we'll be able to see the number or the percentage of products within a category that contained artificial sweeteners both before and after the targets are released.
Interesting. And someone is asking about manufacturers also involved in other initiatives like the Balance Calories Initiative to lower calories in beverages.
Yeah, so there are several initiatives. The Balanced Calorie Initiative is one of them. There's some other like partnership kind of models as well that are encouraging industry to do a couple of different things in terms of sugar reduction. Where we feel like we're a little bit different is that we're working to encourage companies to really consider reformulation and thinking about a category holistically and bringing down the average sugar of an entire portfolio of products within a particular category. But there certainly are other initiatives out there that are working to do slightly different things, you know, reducing portion size, things like that. And we have told companies that if they're committing to do something else to reduce sugar consumption overall, that may not help them meet the sales weighted need targets, like an initiative to reduce serving sizes or portion sizes and encourage people to switch to 0 grams of sugar plain products. Even though that's not really part of the framework of this initiative, if companies are interested in committing to an NSSRI target, we're willing to highlight that other work that they may be doing as part of their commitment to the NSSRI.
So got some questions about the companies that you're talking to. So for companies that are hesitant about reducing salt and sugar, what seems to be the hindrance? Where is there room to work with companies in a meaningful way?
It's a good question. I think it really depends on the company. So for some companies that make products where there's a little bit of a health halo, I think they're publicly committing to reduce sugar or sodium in their products could ultimately be good for their brand. If you're talking about a company that has kind of a classic product, they could be afraid that if they announce that they're reducing sugar in a well-known and loved product, that may turn consumers off of their brand. So I think the ability for a company to commit is frankly sometimes a marketing decision. And I think that's a reason why, like Erin said, there were some companies that told us last time, you know, we're not able to publicly commit to meeting these targets at this time, but we are working towards these targets internally to reduce our sodium or our sugar content to bring it down to these baseline levels. So I think it really varies depending on the company and the products and what their portfolio looks like and who their target audience is.
And you may have answered this in some of the other responses, but what are their incentives to participate?
We think that this is the direction that consumers are heading in. I think there's some market research that shows that consumers care more about the added sugars that they're consuming, especially now that the sugars are on the nutrition facts panel. There's going to be increased visibility around that. I think there's a little bit of a push for like cleaner products, generally fewer ingredients. I think we're just moving in a direction that consumers are showing that they care about the sugar in their foods. So I think it's following the existing trends. And I think there's also an opportunity for some publicity if companies do decide that they can publicly commit. You know, the more companies we have commit, the more we can kind of talk about and highlight the initiative. And with 28 companies committing for the sodium reduction targets, we got a good amount of press. And so we think that's a benefit for companies as well. I'm thinking back to the second part of the question that you had asked just prior about what limitations may be for a company. think it's also important to keep in mind too that sugar does have important functional roles. And so that's some feedback that we've gotten, that it's going to be hard to reformulate. And I think we did a lot of work when we designed the initiative and established the categories and the targets to ensure that they were feasible. So we looked at things like standards of identity. We looked at all the products that were currently available on the market and ensured that within each category, there were products that did already meet the targets. So we think that we hear that there are challenges and concerns from industry, that it takes a long time to make due reformulation, and you may have to change your supply lines and all those sorts of things. But, we've also seen that industry has been incredibly innovative. And we think that they do have the ability to reformulate and get creative and meet the targets and bring sugar down overall.
There's another question, more about products marketing to children. So is the work that you're doing looking at kind of all products, or do you have some research on what's being marketed to children versus maybe what's being marketed to adults?
So I would say that the initiative is really working to cover, everybody, all consumers of packaged foods from children into adults. We don't have, the health department has not published anything recently that I'm thinking of, Aaron, correct me if I'm wrong, around the impact of products that are being marketed to children. But I know that, there are other organizations that focus heavily on that area. I'm thinking about the Rudd Center. And we feel that children and adults are consuming far too much sugar. But I think I was recently looking at the dietary guidelines, and within the age range 5 to 8, it's close to 80% of children in that age range are consuming more sugar than is recommended. So we feel like there's an opportunity to make changes and really improve diets among children, especially because their recommended sugar intake is lower, because the calories they're consuming is a little bit lower. And I think there is more and more research coming out that shows that diets and food habits and taste preferences are established fairly young. And so that's something that we would, love to be able to influence.
Yeah, interesting. Someone is asking, I feel the initiative of reducing portion size puts the burden on the consumer rather than the company for providing a more healthful product. What are your views?
So because we use a sugar density model, reducing the portion size would not get a company closer to meeting the sales weighted mean targets. And we did that intentionally so that we would be encouraging reformulation and trying to get companies to make healthier products, so that by the time a product arrives on a supermarket shelf, it's easier for consumers to make that choice. So I think you're right. It does shift the burden to industry. And I think that's important. Right now, if a consumer wants to go purchase a low sugar yogurt, for example, it's challenging to do. I think it's getting better, but there are a lot of products people don't realize that there are so many products that they would perceive as healthy, yogurt, granola, things like that, that really have a lot of sugar hidden in them. And so we want to be able to try to impact that so that when you go to the grocery store, you have more options.
That may be all the questions I have, although if anyone else has any questions or comments, feel free to type those in. I didn't know if you wanted to share. Oh, here comes one. What proportion of products in the Nielsen data have nutrition data from Label Insights? Did you have to search for data to fill the gaps?
Yeah, we did for some of the products. I don't know off the top of my head what percentage that was. Andrew, do you have any idea?
I don't, but I'm just thinking, to clarify, what we're purchasing from Nielsen is just the sales data. So none of the Nielsen data, the Nielsen data we have doesn't come with the nutrition data. Is that right, Karen?
Yeah, we have to merge it with the nutrition data from Label Insight. But I think the question was like how much overlap was there with the Nielsen sales data. Like I said, I don't remember off the top of my head. The vast majority of products in the Nielsen database do have corresponding nutrition information from Label Insight. But there were some cases where we had to go into stores and actually like look at the products to get the nutrition information. But that was pretty few and far between for a database that includes like thousands of products. So I would say the most of them are. I just don't know an exact percentage off the top of my head.
Another question, is your database open access to other researchers?
Fortunately, it's not. The Nielsen sales data is proprietary, so we are not allowed to share that with the wider public.
But I will say that we do have an open access database called MenuStat that was kind of born out of the sodium reduction portion of the initiative. So as I mentioned, when we launched the sodium reduction targets, at that time we had set targets for both packaged food and also restaurant food. And so we built this database that's publicly available at menustat.org that includes nutrition information for the top 100 restaurant chains. And that's used by a lot of researchers.
And is that just spelled menu, M-E-N-U-S-T-A-T? .org?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I was going to throw that in the chat. Okay. We'll see if there's any other questions, but I just thought to ask, what types of resources are available on your website, or how does someone stay up to date with what's happening with this initiative?
So on our website, we have kind of a technical document with all of the categories and all the specific targets for all of those categories and the definitions of each category. We have a question and answer document. We have a glossary, which is again, a pretty technical document. We have some of the academic articles that we have published on the sodium reduction work that we will update as we publish more on the sugar reduction work. If somebody wants to follow and, you know, keep up to date and be added to our distribution list, you can email us at the sugar.nyc.gov email address that you see up on your screen and ask to be added to our distribution list, and we'll do that. And again, if you are a part of an organization that you think would be a great partner, be interested to sign on in the partnership, you can reach out and let us know that as well.
I do have another question. So even though data shows that consumers are interested in lower sugar, cleaner products, are companies afraid that consumers will not accept lower sugar products? I'm curious about what kind of objections company have with regard to reducing sugar.
Yeah, I think that could be part of it. I mean, I think, again, it really does depend on the product. If you're talking about like classic products that people have come to know and love, I think there is a concern that if you change the sugar in the product, at least in a public way, that might impact consumers choosing your brand. But I mean, we also know that there's stealth reformulation that happens where it's not publicly announced, but in over time, companies are gradually adjusting their recipes and their formulations to impact the sugar or the sodium in a product. And, you know, that would be a way that would get the company closer to meeting our targets as well.
I had a question about, are the meetings with the companies open to the public, or how is that process being done?
Yeah, they have not been open to the public. We circulated the draft categories and targets to industry and through trade associations, and we invited companies to submit written comments and also told them that we would be willing to have one-on-one conversations. And we took those meetings and requests. Again, we're discussing like proprietary data, both from the company's perspective and also some of the Nielsen data that we have. So they're not open to the public. That was our general process for industry engagement, primarily the written comment period. And then if companies wanted to meet in person, we, you know, address questions on the phone, via email, and via live or virtual meetings.
A question, how current is the publicly accessible menu data and is it updated?
So right now, the data that's available on MenuStat is through 2018. Due to some resource and funding constraints, we have not been able to update it for 2019 and 2020, though we're in the process of working with a partner organization to hopefully transition that database over to them so that they can maintain the database and continue to update it going forward. So I would say stay tuned. We hope to have more information to share about more recent data in the upcoming months. And if you're interested in the in staying up to date on that, there's also a subscribe function on MenuStat, and you can be asked to be added to our distribution list.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing the information about these efforts. And as I mentioned, SNEB is a partner in the initiative, so it's watch SNEB for updates as well. And as things change, we can certainly invite you back to give an update for everyone. So just a reminder, there'll be a short survey when I close out the webinar. We appreciate your feedback on this session, as well as ideas for future webinars. And watch for an email probably Monday of next week with a link to the recording and the handout in your CEU certificate. And then SNEB has several webinars still scheduled yet this spring. Check the SNEB website for those webinars. And then if you've noticed the announcement that SNEB's annual conference presentations will be virtual this year, again, August 8th through the 10th, although we are planning to do a two-day kind of deep dive session on those topics in person in New Orleans, August 26th and 27th. So we hope to see you soon, especially back online for a future webinar. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.